made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply."
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Sam Madeira on the Dr. Madeira Show, and today we have a special guest. I'm really excited to have Dr. Casey here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dr. Madeira. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your schedule. I know you're quite busy, and I'm going to introduce you with your bio and then have you add on kind of what's the most up-to-date thing for you lately. So Dr. Casey graduated from Montana State University with a Bachelor's of Science in Cell Biology and Neuroscience, with an emphasis in biomedical sciences. Dr. Holland, which is her last name, earned her doctorate in naturopathic medicine at Vassar University in Seattle, Washington, through a four-year CNME accredited program. While there, she completed specialty rotations in environmental medicine, immune wellness, oncology, IV therapy, Parkinson's disease, emergency medicine, and mind-body medicine. After this, she worked in an integrative health clinic that incorporated functional medicine during her residency. This has provided her with exposure to a wide variety of pathologies and patient care in order to serve you better. While enjoying working with any client's health concerns, ranging from hormones to gastrointestinal health, some of her specialties include chronic EBV, Lyme disease, mold exposure, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, anxiety, and depression. So you are in the southeast section of the U.S., and you completed your residency, and you have a great online presence. If anybody's not on Instagram, or if you are on Instagram, get on Instagram and follow Dr. Casey. What is kind of the cases that you've been seeing a lot of lately, or the research that you've been doing a lot more of lately for patient cases?
Yeah, well, I started seeing a lot of chronic fatigue in med-ed women, and it was kind of right about the same time that Epstein-Barr virus became very, very public. So I just started diving into that because I saw a lot of people taking all the supplements and not getting better and being really scared of Epstein-Barr virus because it is associated with so many scary diseases. So that's what I spend most of my time doing. But that usually leads into mold and Lyme and other things going on as well.
Excellent. And you have had multiple, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, EBV. And if people don't know what that is, that's Epstein-Barr virus, mononucleosis, mono, the kissing disease, etc. So you've had a few of these EBV boot camps that I've seen you talk about on Instagram. And did you just complete one or just start one?
Yeah, we're starting another one in September. Basically, I created the boot camp because I came down with reactivated EBV myself, and who knows how long I was dealing with it. But this time that it came down, it was really bad. And so I created the boot camp in order to empower people, because with EBV, it stays in your body forever. So it's always possible that when life hits, we can't really control stressful situations or a car accident or a mold exposure sometimes, that it could reactivate. And I wanted people to know how best to combat that, since it is associated with so many chronic illnesses.
Excellent. And what's the symptoms that somebody might want to look out for red flags, you know, maybe the top 5 or 10 symptoms that you see over and over again, that maybe isn't in, you know, an online database that someone would search online, or, you know, a pathology textbook that we would read in medical school? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so, I mean, we know Epstein-Barr virus the best by it being mono, and you think of really severe fatigue, sore throat, low-grade fever, sometimes a rash. But when we have it reactivate or we have it in a chronic state, it's a different picture. Definitely severe chronic fatigue. And then from there, the symptoms vary widely. It can be anything from joint pain to anxiety, insomnia, because of the pathways that it turns on. It really causes inflammation in the brain too. Other people have a different picture where they might not have the fatigue as much, and they have food sensitivities. It's linked with SIBO. There's kind of a vast array. And a lot of times people get used to feeling tired. It's like, it's normal to be stressed and busy in our world. So you just get used to being tired. And so a lot of times it presents as low hormones in women or men going to the gym and it taking a really long time for them to recover from their workout.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great overview. And unfortunately, I've been gifted with experiencing a few reactivations of mono EBV myself. And I work with a lot of male patients and female patients in Seattle and Montana. With men, what are you seeing happen for them when, you know, they're going to the gym and they're trying to stay fit? What is the main driving motivating factor that gets them to start seeing you and working on this?
Yeah, the first person that I saw, he was in the military, and he said, I have to work double what everybody else has to work to complete my workout or to stay strong, and I feel like I can never keep up, or I'm almost lacking motivation. But it was really clear that he wasn't lacking motivation. So sometimes it looks like that, where there really is just a feeling of being held back and they have to work extra hard to keep muscle on or to keep up with everybody else. And then there's also post-exertional malaise syndrome, which is basically you go to the gym, you work out, and then instead of just having the normal muscle soreness that you might have with a normal workout, you have flu-like symptoms and feel sick for, sometimes it's 3 days, sometimes it's a week to 10 days afterwards, and it takes you a really long time to come back from that. So I would say that with men, it's usually when they really start to notice that they're having difficulty with their physical exertion and that they don't feel themselves. But a lot of times they just keep pushing through it for a while, which is common.
Very common. Yeah. I've been guilty of that. And I think it was 2018 in January, and I rechecked some things in my blood. And then I realized that, you know, the feeling that I had was lack of motivation, even though I had the desire and I knew that I needed to get work done and work out. I just felt like I was literally walking through a room of Jell-O or molasses. And it was horrible, especially if, you know, someone's listening to this and you're trying to run a business or, you know, run a branch of a tech company in Seattle or, you know, California or somewhere like that or other places, or you're running, you know, you're working on a ranch or a farm in Montana and you're trying to, you know, do all the things you need to do. You might want to become aware of, hey, I have flu-like symptoms. This isn't the flu. Don't confuse it with the seasonal flu, because it very well may not be. So I just want to differentiate for our listeners acute mononucleosis infection versus chronic reactivated mono or relapsing mono, or however we want to distinguish them with the nomenclature. But I know that in the conventional world, usually they talk about mononucleosis, you know, you're in college, the kissing disease, or, you know, you share a glass of water with someone or something like that, and you feel like you have the flu, and they just basically tell you to rest and drink water, is what I recall. Both as far as what would you look for, and somebody who had an acute infection, what would we see And for somebody with a chronic infection, what would we see and how would we want to work with them differently, if at all?
Yeah, so with an acute infection, a lot of times the exposure is, like you said, in college, or it could be when they're a child and it could have been really mild and they didn't even know it. And usually with that, you're going to go to the doctor and they'll do a monospot and they check the IgM, and that's the body's first response to the Epstein-Barr virus. So that's acute mono. Usually, traditionally, it's rest and drink water. For us as naturopaths, we would still probably want to support the immune system more and do a little bit more of an aggressive approach there. I think that anytime the Epstein-Barr virus is happening, you really need to pay attention to the adrenal system and the gastrointestinal health picture. Now, when we have chronic infections, a lot of times one signal too is that there's a cycle. So you feel good and then you have these symptoms and you feel good and then you have these symptoms. So is what happens is, now this is where it gets a little gray, because there's different antibodies that we can test for in the blood. And sometimes they show up and sometimes they don't, because the immune system's extremely complex. So usually is what we're going to look for chronic is the early antigen antibody to the virus. And that's usually showing positive between 3 and 6 months. So technically, we would think that after that, it's just EBV, you should feel better, it should go away. But is what we see happen is that the viral capsid antigen IgG and the nuclear antibody IgG often stay really elevated. And if you have symptoms and they're super high, we're talking like 10 times the upper limit or more, that's when we're putting you into the chronic reactivated category. But it is confusing because according to conventional standards, that's not how this virus works. That's not how it should be presenting. I also have been seeing cases where we have the early antigen positive and the IgM positive. And people are like, so, and they've had it before in the past. So the IgM is actually positive again. And that is not how we understand the immune system to react to it. So it's also very clear that we just need to have a lot more study on the immunology and how this is working with the virus. But once we're in the chronic reactivated state, or we know that that's happening, then to me, that's just a red flag that we need to look at what else is going on in the body, because over 90% of people are exposed to Epstein-Barr virus, and they have the ability to put it into a latent state. All of us have that ability. So if we're not able to do that, the body isn't doing what it's supposed to do. There's something inhibiting that. And that's when we need to look at other stealth infections like Lyme, mold, environmental factors, other toxins. Glyphosate is a huge one now. What's going on with the gastrointestinal tract, what your stress levels are like. A lot of us don't have healthy stress response and we're not breathing properly, and that plays a role. Then it's just kind of several different things. I'm sure that you have kind of a way that you tackle these things as you go through it with patients, huh, Dr. Sam?
Definitely. Yeah, I think usually patients aren't, if you're not already indoctrinated into the functional medicine, naturopathic medicine, integrative medicine world, that it's hard for people to wrap their head around, you know, why are we doing so many tests? Why doesn't my conventional MD or nurse practitioner know this stuff? Why didn't they look at this test? Et cetera, et cetera. The questions just keep coming, which is, you know, more reason for people to listen to this podcast and follow Dr. Casey and really educate yourselves. And if someone in your family is suffering from this, you know, ask for help, do the due diligence. And when you start actually looking underneath the hood, so to speak, you may find the root cause, and hopefully you do. Hopefully it doesn't take as long as it did for me. I think it was about 13 years before a doctor finally said, hey, we're going to test your infections in your blood, which I had never even heard of. And I just graduated from Bastyr. Nobody had actually really focused on enough to make it a big deal. in our training, I think. So hopefully we can, you know, save people the misery of a decade or more of suffering with chronic fatigue syndrome. So yeah, it's a big ball of wax, folks, once you start unraveling things. So for acute folks, you know, usually what do they give, like acyclovir and water, or just water and rest if it's not too bad?
Yeah, I mean, for acute, they might give acyclovir more now, but I know that in children, they'll still just say water and rest.
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
I'm here in my living room peering through my mini blinds at a man who's sawing off something under my neighbor's car. Yep, this guy is stealing catalytic converters. And if you report thieves like him, you could get a reward up to $25,000. Just submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. That's H-E-A-T. The Virginia State Police HEAT Program. Reported. Rewarded.
And then with the early antigen being reactivated, and then they usually do give acyclovir.
And you did a bunch of research on mononucleosis and specifically EBV. So for the listeners, if you aren't a physician or don't know much about EBV, it's a virus, and viruses stay with us for our whole lives. They basically go into like a dormancy, and similar to shingles, become reactivated under times of immense stress or immune deficiencies, nutrient deficiencies, et cetera, and other co-infections like Dr. Casey was mentioning. You were researching back to, I believe it was Dr. Epstein who discovered the virus, and you were doing some research around that. Do you want to share just kind of a synopsis of what you discovered?
Yeah, he was looking into it as a possibility of lymphoma, and he did discover that it was the first human tumor virus, and he spent a long time with it, and it didn't work. A lot of his experiments didn't work, and then it was actually when he was headed back with a sample, and it got a little scrambled in the airplane, but that's when it worked. So yeah, he is credited with discovering that it was the first human tumor virus, and it's associated with Burkitt's lymphoma is what it's most known for. But then in the past, the past year or two is when all this research has come out that it's associated with this cancer and that cancer and 7 autoimmune conditions. And now it just seems like it's associated with everything, which when you look at it, it makes sense, because for it to reactivate, something else is going on in the body. So is it really the virus alone that caused all those? I'm sure it contributed, because it does turn on pathways that are dangerous and that cause problems in the body. But there was other things going on before that. So I don't think we can say that it's just the virus that's causing all of that. And it kind of makes sense that it's associated with all those illnesses when you look at it from a holistic perspective. That's kind of what I see.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, knowing that I have mono or EBV, that for me is motivation enough as a male, and not being able to function the way I want and need to function to run a business when I have a reactivation is enough motivation for me to do whatever my naturopathic doctor says. Hopefully that's enough for other guys out there. And, you know, if you have chronic fatigue, low hormones, and you're seeing a doctor and you're not addressing stealth infections like EBV and Lyme, you know, testing isn't always, as Dr. Casey already mentioned, the best parameter or milestone to say that you actually have it or not, but it's, you know, can be somewhat of a tool. For your patients, What are you seeing, you know, one or two treatments that are really moving the needle that you feel, you know, really strongly about that most every mono patient should do or reactivated mono patient should do?
Yeah, so everybody's first move is always lysine and lorcidin and kill the virus. And lorcidin can work well. Actually, I listened to Dr. Paul Anderson talk about this too, because he is also a huge expert in this, obviously. Yeah. So a lot of this I learned from him. But when I was doing the research, there was a article that came out and it was through the World Health Organization and basically talking about guidelines for Epstein-Barr virus and how to manage it. And the two pathways that they were talking about was the NF-kappa-B pathway, which is an inflammatory pathway that causes a lot of problems, as well as the JAK-STAT pathway. And in naturopathic medicine, we know that we have curcumin for the NF-kappa-B, and there is research supporting that resveratrol, when taken and dosed appropriately, can help with the JAK-STAT pathway. So those are two things that I think should always be involved as a precautionary, as a protective mechanism, especially when the virus is activated. That being said, that's not medical advice. Ask your doctor, because you need to know what medications you're on and all of that. Another thing is just selenium, because selenium recycles glutathione. Anytime you have a chronic viral infection, you have a lot of oxidative stress in your body. Glutathione is our body's biggest antioxidant. He kind of runs around grabbing things that can cause chaos, and he packages it up so that our body can get rid of it. But when he does that, he changes form and has to get replenished. And selenium helps do that. Selenium also is seen to help with, it has shown that it can decrease TPO antibodies in different autoimmune conditions with thyroid, more so Graves, but really it can help with stopping that cycle of our thyroid being burdened due to the oxidative stress, partially also because it helps with when we're converting from T4 to T3. So that's another one. And then I think that using botanical medicine to find, we have so many different herbs that are antiviral and they all have different properties. So I don't always use lemon balm. Sometimes I use something else. Or if there's other things going on, we might use something like astragalus. It's really great for supporting natural killer cells, which we need to put a virus into a latent state. And it's not as directly, it's not a hero like lemon balm is. So I think that when you use botanical medicine appropriately, and I know Dr. Sam is a huge expert in botanical medicine, and you take into account what that person's stress levels are like, what other things are going on in their body, that you can pick an herbal mix that really supports their system on all levels. And I like to use a blend of herbs. Herbs also oftentimes work best when they are put together.
Awesome. I love that approach. Yeah. Lots of herbs are very helpful. And it's really good to have that science now about the different pathways, inflammatory pathways and et cetera from EBV. For patients listening or our prospective patients, you know, you may want to get these tests done and figure out what's going on if you have chronic fatigue syndrome, and, you know, seek out Dr. Casey, and we'll mention her website at the end of the podcast today. I'm curious, we were speaking, you know, weeks leading up today's podcast, and specifically about research around EBV and potentially other stealth infections that decrease hormones and how that could decrease testosterone specifically in men. What were the things that you found that you want to share with everybody?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of discussion on this, because I don't think it's anything new that we see really low hormones across the board in men and women with stealth infections. I have a lot of concern, mainly from women that come in are concerned about fertility with Epstein-Barr virus, because we see their hormones look like that of a postmenopausal woman when they're still in their 20s. So I have dug into the research. It seems like there's kind of two schools of thoughts. On the one hand, it just makes sense. Your body is fighting a chronic infection, which means that it's in a more fight or flight state where it's fighting for itself and it's saying this is not a good time to have a baby and make hormones. Mm-hmm. So there's that going on. And then when we look more into the biochemistry, there is a study. It came out in either 2011 or 2013, and basically is what it's getting at is that the inflammatory pathways that stealth infections turn on change how the body processes cholesterol. And cholesterol is the precursor to pregnenolone, and pregnenolone is the precursor to your hormones. So a lot of times there's school of thought around something going on with pregnenolone, and we've had a hard time figuring out what exactly it is, but it seems like there's kind of multiple factors where there's the actual stress factor and the body recognizing that it just isn't going to support making those hormones. And then there's the factor of actually what the virus is doing and the pathways that it interferes with biochemically when we're making our hormones.
Excellent. Yeah, to me, that makes a lot of sense. For the listener, you might want to play that back and listen to it again on the recording. For the times that I see people under a state of reactivation is usually they're, you know, sleep deprived. And we know from Matthew Walker's research and book, Why We Sleep, and he's a PhD down in Berkeley, California, the university there. And he says that less than 7 hours of sleep and the testes actually lose mass as well as our muscles. So for if you're listening as a guy and you don't want your testes to shrink, you know, obviously drink clean water, eat clean food, but make sure you're sleeping at least 7 or more hours a night. And, you know, you can prevent a reactivation because, like Dr. Casey said, over 90% of us have been exposed to mono. So you may not have experienced a reactivation yet, but, you know, maybe you're remodeling your home. You're working, you know, 50 to 70 hours plus a week and then taking care of the kids on the weekend. And you just feel like you're burning the candle hard at both ends. So that's great. Was there any other research or anything else that you've seen in the research around mono and low hormones?
More just the correlation. I mean, I can't think of a person that I've seen with chronic reactivated EBV and them having healthy hormones. And I'm sure that you see that too. So a lot on the correlation. And there is one study, it's about camels though, and their testosterone levels with a viral infection and how it was related to low testosterone. But that was kind of vague as well. So really, I think we're all seeing it, and there's a few out there that look into the science, but I think a lot of it is just the body is in a fight or flight stress response, and that's not a good setting to make hormones. And a lot of times also when EBV is reactivated, there could be something like mold or Lyme. And that compounds it, or like you said, not sleeping. So then you have multiple factors that are creating a scenario for low hormones, not just EBV as well.
Yeah, let's dive into, I know Lyme is a whole ball of wax, and we could probably talk for hours about chronic Lyme disease infection for people. First, I just want to blow the whole myth out of the water that the CDC and lovely other organizations are saying that chronic Lyme infection is not a thing, because it definitely is. And there are more people with chronic Lyme in the US than people with breast cancer. So it's something to be aware of. especially if you spend a lot of time in the wilderness and aren't, you know, protecting yourself the way you need to with clothing and different sprays and things like that, bug sprays, tick sprays. So with Lyme disease, how would that, you know, affect hormones, and how many people are you seeing with Lyme disease and other co-infections like viruses like EBV? Do you usually see people come in with both, or is it, you know, usually just, oh, I have Lyme disease and we're good, or just work on that?
Yeah, so I'm sure you see this as well, but it's kind of, if somebody has Lyme disease or somebody has mold exposure, then EBV almost is always reactivated. Almost always, because it's a medicine. So of course there's anomalies, but EBV is kind of an opportunistic guy. So if the immune system is burdened, then he shows up. And Lyme has a huge burden on the immune system. So sometimes we see just EBV with something else and not the Lyme, but a lot of times if Lyme is there, then it's almost always, there's a really strong possibility that EBV is also going to be there.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And then with these infections burdening the immune system, and you know, I think a lot of people think of Lyme disease. I grew up in northern New England. Lyme disease was discovered, I believe, in the late 70s by a doctor at Yale, and he thought it was juvenile arthritis in a child, and then they discovered that, you know, Lyme disease. So it comes from the name of the town in Connecticut, Lyme, Connecticut, spelled L.
I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded. I'm on a city street in Virginia, standing in an empty parking space where just last night, Bob's car was stolen. Did you see Bob's car get stolen? Probably not. But do you know who's been stealing cars in Virginia? You could get a reward of up to $25,000. Submit a confidential tip at heatreward.com or call 1-800-947-HEAT. The HEAT program from the Virginia State Police. Reported. Rewarded.
Y-M-E. And there's actually Lyme, New Hampshire, near where I grew up. Anyhow, Lyme disease is now, they've said that it's found in all states in the U.S. So if you're not up to date on that, I believe they said that the beginning of this year or last year, do you know? I think it was 2018, maybe.
Recently, it's been recent for sure.
Yeah, and that to me is startling, because I was very aware of the endemic areas, you know, Northern California, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Great Lakes, kind of that, you know, North Midwest area of the U.S. and the East Coast, the whole East Coast, New Jersey, Long Island, especially. So even if you didn't grow up in those places historically, if you vacation there or travel there for work, I've had patients who literally spent less than 2 weeks in North Carolina and came back to the greater Seattle area or New Hampshire, went to college in the East Coast, and they have Lyme, chronic Lyme, and they're kind of wrestling with me. Why are you testing me for this? I live in Seattle, you know, my MD said that there's no reason why I would have this, or my other natural healthcare provider said there's no reason why I would have this. So it's good to do due diligence. And, you know, even though the Lyme test isn't the best test in the world, you know, get the test and get treated. So for Lyme, with the Lyme test that we currently have in the blood, how many bands does the CDC say that people have to have a Lyme infection? And how many bands do you consider a positive Lyme test? I know it's controversial, but this is a whole big ball of wax if people don't know what we're talking about. It's a blood test. It's a conventional blood test you can get through LabCorp and Quest Diagnostics, major lab companies in the United States. They're the two biggest ones, and LabCorp is, you know, they're pretty much almost a monopoly. So someone comes to your clinic and they have one to two bands on the test. What is your kind of general educational, I need to educate you on what this means kind of thing?
Yeah, so the CDC is five bands. Pretty sure about that. I have brain fog often, but pretty sure it's five bands. So if I see less than that, then what I'll do is, many times when we have a chronic health condition going on, there's so many different symptoms. It's overwhelming for the patient or client, and it can be overwhelming for providers. So I like to use Dr. Horowitz questionnaire, and I like to gauge their symptoms. Now, if they have two or three bands and they don't have hardly any symptoms, then maybe they do have it or were exposed, but their body's handling it well, or maybe they don't have it and it's a false positive. But if they have two or three bands and they have all these symptoms and they can't sleep at night and they have wandering joint pain and they're having fevers, then I'm going to approach it as if that's what's going on. A lot of times I educate them about other labs. Igenix is sometimes more sensitive, but it's further not covered by insurance and is very expensive out of pocket. There's mm-hmm. a couple other, there's a urine test now, Sarah's Nanotrap. There's other things, but from what I do and a lot of what I do oftentimes is out of state. So sometimes I'm working strictly from a consultant basis and my hands are a little, like I'm not ordering prescriptions or anything like that. So then what I'm going to be doing with them and talking to them about their body and how to strengthen those systems are the same. And I think that as a naturopathic doctor, it's kind of the same, except naturopathic doctors, depending on where you are, can prescribe. So a lot of times I work with them to find a local naturopathic doctor or functional medicine doctor, and we start working on all the systems and strengthening the terrain and get them on a good protocol that works for them. But I think that when it comes to these labs with Lyme, that you just gotta listen to the patient really and think about what's going on. And if there's no explanation for their joint pain and insomnia, but they have three bands, then it's pretty likely.
Excellent explanation. Yeah. I think that's, yeah, it's really a symptomatic and diagnosis, and unfortunately a diagnosis of excluding hundreds and maybe not hundreds, but, you know, at least, you know, 30 other things before getting down to, okay, now this is chronic Lyme, and no medical doctor is going to risk their medical license. Very few anyway, are risking their medical license to say it's chronic Lyme disease. A great documentary for people is, I believe it's called Under Our Skin. And, you know, Dr. Klinghart's in it, and there are some patients in it, multiple patients talking about their stories. And not all chronic Lyme, you know, gets like neurological and you don't have to have a bullseye rash to have a diagnosis. I grew up in Vermont, New Hampshire, and went to high school in Massachusetts for 2 years, and I never had a bullseye rash, and I was in the woods literally, you know, for the first 19 years of my life, pretty much until I left New England. So you don't have to have the textbook signs and symptoms, and really, unfortunately, medicine is a lot more political than I ever thought it was when I was an EMT in 2001. And then I was seeing a naturopathic doctor and I said, okay, I want to go into naturopathic medicine. I had no idea that it is as political as, you know, as we know it to be, because we're in it. We're in the trenches, we're in the front lines, and, you know, you're doing great work with people. So with these chronic infections, we did talk about, you know, what can happen if it's left untreated. What are the concerns? You know, you mentioned Burkitt's lymphoma with EBV and autoimmune diseases. You know, what's the concern there, and what percentage of the patients roughly, or, you know, are all the patients you're seeing already have autoimmunity and have these chronic infections, and then you find the chronic infection? Or is there, you know, are most of them already in the autoimmune stages?
Sure. Well, I guess some autoimmune conditions are more common than others and more severe than others. So, for example, Hashimoto's, a lot of people have the Hashimoto's, and then when they hear about Epstein-Barr virus, they get tested and they find out that they have it. And so a lot of times that's diagnosed before the Epstein-Barr virus. I would say that it's less common with it to present that way with the MS and things like that, that they are saying now, and that's kind of newer. So I would say Hashimoto's is the thing that I see the most, but a lot of the times I'm grateful for this too. The people that I work with are very vigilant about their health, and just, I catch them at the place where they're tired and a life stressor happened or it's reactivated. And that's kind of my favorite place to intervene, because we can prevent so much. And that's kind of what I'm really passionate about with Epstein-Barr virus, because it's almost like I said, like the warning sign. If you don't have an autoimmune condition yet or something like that, this is the warning sign where you have an opportunity here to change your health, to change patterns, and prevent something really bad from happening. So that's usually where I see where people are finding me at.
Excellent. Yeah, it's definitely easier for the patient and the doctor, just everybody involved, especially the patient, if you can be more proactive, you know, on the offensive instead of the defensive with your health. Unfortunately, I think for men, we like to be on the offense about everything else in our life but our health, which is, you know, kind of the masculine code, you know, suck it up, no big deal, be a warrior, get through it, push through, don't be a baby, all those things that we're all kind of trained throughout our early youth. You know, and I went to all boys school and all boys summer camp for a while. And so a lot of the kind of the drive is, you know, suck it up, be a man. And I think there's a time and a place for that. But when it comes to your health, you definitely don't want to try to suck up like rheumatoid arthritis or, you know, a autoimmune condition or chronic fatigue syndrome. If you notice early signs of the things that we're talking about in yourself or, you know, your dad or your brother or somebody that you care about in your family, maybe they're not listening, you can have them listen to this. I want to share how people can find you online. But before I do that, are there any kind of like parting words or parting things that you want to share with people?
Yeah, I would say kind of off of what you were saying, was there is a time and place to suck it up and have grit. But more and more with where we're at in our world, because of toxins we're exposed to, stress exposure, etc., health is something that we really need to take care of. And we can save a lot of heartache and medical expenses when we listen to our body. So to listen to your body, and hopefully my dad will listen to this so that he can hear that. And then also to ask questions, because we are at a place in medicine right now where we do need to ask questions, because we do see that things aren't working and that things aren't lining up, and keep asking questions. And if somebody doesn't have an answer, it doesn't mean that it's not out there.
Excellent. That's great. And kind of as an addendum, I'm kind of going to throw your curveball here, so I apologize, but we didn't get mold, and I just realized that. So I think mold's a really important thing, especially if men are doing, you know, demolition or construction, and you're working on a building that doesn't have a roof on it yet, and you know there's rain or weather coming onto the wood framing of the house. Or I grew up doing construction with my dad in northern New England on my vacation, so that's why I'm speaking to this. But you want to just talk about mold and kind of where people should, you know, try to look for mold, and maybe just discuss how you've seen it affect hormone health in your patients?
Sure. Mold is awful. Mold is sneaky because I think that we think it's not that big of a deal, kind of. It's like it's part of nature, or we take good care of our home. It's not that bad. And the symptoms aren't, it's not clear cut. It's not one day you wake up feeling sick and the day before you were fine. It's really gradual. So you might at first just notice that you're not sleeping that well. Then you might be having anxiety. Next thing you know, you're having gastrointestinal upset, or you're really, really fatigued. And it just keeps spiraling. So mold is sneaky. My favorite resource for mold is Dr. Jill Krista's book, Break the Mold. And she does such a wonderful job in it. But the things to look for with mold that I see people talking about a lot is if you're waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, because it affects your antidiuretic hormone that controls how your kidneys are filtering. If you have really bad anxiety, and maybe you do have something to be anxious about, I think anxiety, there's always something that we have to worry about. It's valid. But if it's that crippling anxiety where it's constant and that's new for you, and brain fog with mold, a lot of times EBV causes brain fog too, but the brain fog with mold is very distinct, where it is really to the point where you just feel like you can't. I remember I had mold exposure, and I remember thinking, there's no way that I can like talk to someone right now. It was just so severe. So if you start to have those symptoms, as far as buildings and whatnot, if something smells musty, there is mold. Now, some people are more sensitive than others. Some people carry an HLA gene, about 25% of the population. Others don't. So some are more sensitive. But even if you're exposed to mold, it likes to hang out. The spores don't just go away. So it is something to be really aware of. I think that in any building that's older now, that it can be there, you know, I just keep seeing more and more mold. Granted, I am in the southeast right now, and so there's just a lot of it everywhere. You might also notice that as the weather changes, if there's a storm or something and it rains, your symptoms might get worse because there can be mold levels in the air outside as well. So all of those are things to take into account for. And there's really easy screening tests that you can do. Dr. Shoemaker has a vision test online, and it's not diagnostic, but if it shows up positive, it's a pretty good, you know, something's going on there, and it gives you a step forward. There's at-home Petri dishes, which again are not 100% positive, like, or sensitive, excuse me. But if there is mold growing, then you know that you have a problem. So really easy steps that you can do to kind of see if that's something you should be concerned about, instead of being like, it's not mold. And then 5 years go by and you're worse. And again, Dr. Jill Krista's book is really, really good with mold.
Excellent. That's and what's that called again?
It's called Break the Mold.
Break the Mold. Excellent. Yeah. So get that book if you smell mold. I remember when I was in medical school, and or naturopathic medical school at Bass here, where we both went, and we had a patient, and we thought it was seasonal allergies. They had the fatigue, the kind of brain fog, the, you know, rhinitis, runny nose, sneezing, and they had two or three different bathrooms in their home, and I think they were remodeling one and not using one, so they had another one they were using. and the one they weren't using, mold literally grew in the toilet. And she didn't look in the bathroom until, you know, 2 months later when she came back and she told us, oh, there's mold in my toilet. So I'm just curious, if somebody's listening to this and they find mold, what should they do? Should they just clean it up with bleach and some gloves and call it good? Or, you know, what should they do about it in their home?
No, run away. never clean up mold by yourself. If you are going to look up how to clean it, that is also, it talks about the best ways to clean it up in Dr. Jill's book, but you want to wear a respirator. The spores go into your lungs. Dr. Sam brought up a good point about the allergy symptoms, which I should not leave out, that a lot of times the first symptom is chronic sinusitis and nasal congestion, because it hangs out in your sinuses too. So definitely go get help. And if you have to go into a room or something, make sure that you're wearing a respirator.
Excellent. Yeah, and I've heard for black mold specifically, people literally, you have to leave your home. You literally have to leave your home or your apartment and leave everything in there. Don't take your clothes. Don't take your books. It will come with you and repopulate. So it's kind of like the end of Stranger Things. They have to leave the town. If you're a Stranger Things fan, you have to leave all your stuff behind, and you're not packing up a moving truck. So that's tragic. I do recognize that. And especially for me, I love books and other things and records, but mold can hide in those places. And if you open an old book and it smells like mold, then you need to toss it. Don't give it to somebody, because then they could get mold infection. And I believe it was Dr. Krista Christie. She was talking, I believe, on social media about how it affects thyroid and potentially testosterone, it sounds like. So if you're a guy and you're starting to gain weight, you have sinusitis, you have low testosterone symptoms, low motivation, sexual dysfunction, maybe not, then you should definitely get checked by mold. If everything else that we've been talking about comes back negative, you know, you want to check mold too. What are a couple other labs, you know, not so much for the home kit test, but what's your go-to one or two labs that you like to use to check mold in your patients?
Yeah, I really like the Great Plains mycotoxins test. Or if we have a lot of other things going on, you can start with the organic acids test from Great Plains. So it's interesting, because the organic acids test, as I'm sure Dr. Sam knows, but for our listeners, it looks at kind of how your body is responding to fungus or candida or gram-negative bacteria, instead of just testing for how much is there. So I like that, because then, you know, you're looking at how this body is handling it. The mycotoxins test is also really good. Or Dr. Shoemaker, you can go to his website. He has a printout of all the labs that it's looking more at the systems of your body that it's affecting. So like I was talking about ADH with antidiuretic hormone, it'll look into those things. And that's a good way that once you know you have it and you're working with a doctor that's treating you, you can track to see improvements going there. So that's a really good approach.
I like that. Yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, the urinary symptom, which I don't think that's something, honestly, that I've heard before, because I don't work with a ton of mold patients, but a lot of men have, you know, nocturia. So they wake up in the middle of the night and they think it's their prostate, and maybe it's your prostate and mold. You know, you're, you know, 55 or 65 and you're waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom 1 to 3 times a night. And then you think, oh, I just have seasonal allergies, so I'll just take more, Claritin or something like that, or Benadryl before sleep. So in this case, you know, work with somebody like Dr. Casey and get your home checked, go to Dr. Shoemaker's website, get the mold mycotoxin urine test checked out. I find, with the few mold patients I've worked with, it is very hard to treat. Would you say that? I mean, you're more of a ninja with mold than me, but would you say that it's just like, my gosh, like we're throwing everything at this. We got binders on board. We got, you know, stuff to do all the things to pull this out of the body, but it's, would you say that it's challenging?
So I think the only reason that I know a lot about mold is because I was exposed to mold. And it's like the same thing with EBV, you know, like mold is really hard. And a lot of times, and I know that you talked about this in one of your previous podcasts, but its effect on mast cells. Mm-hmm. So I think it depends how long the mold exposure is and if the person's sensitive. But if it's been a really long exposure and those mast cells have been turned on, in your other podcast, I know you talk about how hard it is to get that turned off. So that's part of it. But I think it also depends on what else is going on, because if there's intestinal permeability that was there before the mold, or this mold has been 10 years, that can be really hard. But yeah, at first with mold, with anything, it feels like nothing works. And I made the mistake of bringing my books with me. And so now they're in the garage and I'm still getting rid of stuff that's mold. I also made the mistake of bringing some of my clothes with me. There are some detergents like EC3 and borax, and I mix that with like Branch Basics and put that in there. And if it was just a slight exposure, I think it works pretty good. But a lot of clothes, I'm like, okay, dumpster time now. It really, cause I, even though I was sick, I was like, really? Like, it's not going to wash out. Mold, and Dr. Krista talks about in her book about how it kind of makes you feel depersonalized. So you don't quite trust your decision-making. So you feel indecisive and you're like, maybe I am just feeling this, or maybe it is just me. And I think that delays people going and getting help with mold, plus the fact that they know they might have to leave their home or get rid of their stuff. So I think that one of the biggest reasons that it's so hard to deal with is that we delay getting help with it. And so then it's been a really chronic thing, and we've waited until we can't wait anymore because we can't function and get out of bed and go to work.
Yeah. I mean, well said. I couldn't have said it better myself. And you know, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I think the, you know, silver lining, as you know, and you've said, is that you really know mold personally more than somebody, a doctor who hasn't gone through that. So you can, you know, have empathy for a patient, you know, when they say, oh, I don't want to throw away my stuff. You can say, well, I'm doing it with you, you know, like we're doing this horrible thing together.
Yeah.
You know, and I've known people who in the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Seattle, this whole damp area, and there's, you know, the East Coast is humid, other humid areas in the Midwest, there's a lot of mold. River valleys, there's mold in the homes. Flooding areas, there's mold. So almost everywhere, unless you're in Arizona, and then they have other problems. But what I'm getting at is that I've seen or heard of people in the community that we're in have to leave everything, you know, and be pretty much hospitalized. So why I say this is, you know, get out while you can, because it's only going to get worse. Kind of like the Lyme and the EBV, and I know this isn't the happiest podcast that you could be listening to, but people need to know this information, which is why we're doing this today on a Friday afternoon instead of like having fun with our friends and family. So I want to share where people can find you. So your website is www.drkaseyholland.com, and Casey spelled with K-K-A-S-E-Y, so drkaseyholland.com. And social media, you're on Facebook under DocNDHolland. And Instagram at drkaseyholland. So I mean, I love everything you're doing on Instagram and social media, and it's, you know, it's awesome to connect with somebody who's kind of a, you know, like-minded spirit in the naturopathic community around, you know, chronic infections. And unfortunately, we've had to go through our own battles, like many other people before us, to have to learn the hard way, you know, through personal experience. As far as your next boot camp, you said that starts next month. When does it start, and how can people register for the EBV boot camp?
Yeah, it's going to start on September 16th. And if you go to my website and subscribe to the newsletter, you can, I'll send an announcement when registration opens, or you can email support@drkeseyholland.com. And we'll get you all the details. The cool thing about the boot camp is that I change it every time because there's new research, there's new things. And so if you did it in the past, you get the new information. So it's like a constant, you constantly get more out of it. And I hope to keep that up as long as possible, as long as there's new stuff coming out about EBV that can help get people healthy.
Excellent. That's an amazing resource. And thank you so much for doing that. And thank you for being on the show today and giving up your free time. Everybody, please share this podcast with friends and family. I'm keeping it ad-free, and we look forward to hearing you on the next episode. Have a good day.
Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.